Good morning. Today is Wednesday, January the 10th. Joining us this morning from Recology Humboldt, Frank Nelson. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
You ready for your question?
Yeah.
Let's see if we have anything that's just kind of see what the next one is here. Oh, this is a bunny. This is easy. Where did the expression according to Hoyle come from?
According to who?
Hoyle.
Hoyle. I'd imagine it's like an old TV show.
Do you play cards?
No. I used to play a little bit of blackjack, but once it got over $2 a hand.
Well, that explains why most of the cards at manufacturer.
Yeah.
Hoyle.
Are from Hoyle.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
An Englishman named Edmund Hoyle wrote a rule book for a card game, which the ancestor of bridge, in 1742. Hoyle's rules were used to settle arguments during that one game until Robert Foster published Foster's Hoyle in 1897, which included the rules for many other card games. Since then, according to Hoyle, has meant according to the rules of any game, including those played in business or personal relationships.
Well, you know what? At my house, it's according to Christina because
yeah,
we play by her rules.
Yeah, imagine that, huh? Oh.
And every game, these seem to change. So yeah. The way she wins. I didn't know Go Fish had so many different rules to it, you know?
Yeah. Go sweep the floor.
I've got one for you this morning.
All right.
100 billion of them get made every year in America.
Skin cells.
Skin cells. No. I'll give you a clue. They're recyclable.
Oh, this is business related.
Yeah.
I would aluminum cans or containers.
Close. Cardboard boxes. 100 billion cardboard boxes in America, approximately, get manufactured every year, just in America.
In America.
Just in America.
And not imported.
Not imported. I'd imagine that they.
How many of those are recyclable?
All of them. I mean, potentially.
Well, you got the waxy inside thing.
Yeah, if you got the wax on the outside, or you got, I'd imagine that includes pizza boxes. So if you got pizza toppings stuck to it, no. But, you know, I think most of our cardboard at our house is from Amazon. Yeah, or another delivery company. So those are usually corrugated, and those are good cardboard boxes. And that brings up another point. So,
he's taking over.
46 gallons of oil are saved when you recycle 2 tons of cardboard. So in the manufacturing process, it takes oil somehow. You know, I've got my statistics this morning, but if you recycle 2 tons, which is what, 4,000 pounds of cardboard, you save 46 gallons of oil.
Huh.
It's interesting, right? And you don't think about it, and then you save something like 9 yards of available space in the landfill. We do really good in this country at recycling.
That's why
cardboard.
We used to burn them, right?
That's why you see them as fire
Sorry.
Starters. Yeah, no, you got to
going backwards on you.
No, yeah. I think I have done that, especially here in the North Coast. I mean, everybody's got a wood stove. You had a wood stove?
No.
You don't have a wood stove?
No.
No, I have one. We don't use it too much, but it was my first introduction to one when I moved here, and it's nice. I mean, it's a nice addition to the heating of the house.
I like fireplaces.
Yeah. Do you like gas ones?
Yeah.
I've heard they're kind of inefficient, but they do. The aesthetic is nice.
Yeah. It depends on what your purpose is.
Yeah.
Yeah. The place I'm looking at, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be just gas. It's going to be one of those long, skinny things.
Yeah.
That is just there for looks.
Yeah, we have an electric one that we bought, and it's in our bedroom. It's got, you know.
One of the fake ones?
Yeah,
you lean it against the wall, and, you know, it could tip over if you don't pay attention?
Yeah. Or you can run into it.
Ooh.
Fancy.
Yeah. I wonder who came up with that idea.
It's Amazon fancy.
Yeah. You got to go to the local fireplace store or stove shop. Oh, jeez. Hey, is there any progress with any of the state recycling mandates, new laws, new interpretations, that kind of stuff that we need to be concerned about?
You know, I think the only big change that I read about for 2024 is that they're going to be doing CRV for wine boxes and some of the juice containers. So the California
recycling,
CalRecycle is going to be growing the CRV deal for those items.
Wine boxes and what?
Wine boxes and like juice, you know, like your orange juice and some other containers.
The jug?
Yeah, yeah. So some of those containers are going to be, and wine bottles, which was pretty surprising to me, but wine bottles are going to be included in CRV this year.
Because of the glass?
Yeah.
Is there a shortage for glass?
No, no. And you know what? Glass, and this is another interesting, I came with some great stats. Linda gave me a whole bunch of stats. Oh. And so she was...
It said, go forth and conquer.
Go forth yeah, okay. and spread the word. But I mean, I was reading it. It's just a great article. I'll email it to you. It's actually got a lot of really cool stats. But aluminum cans, like we're drinking from this morning, and glass can be recycled indefinitely. Like it never degrades. Like paper... If you recycle paper at some point,
the fiber kind of starts
yeah, it becomes toilet dissipating. Paper. Yeah, and yeah. At the end of the life, but aluminum cans and glass can be recycled indefinitely. They never lose their cellular rigidity, right? So you've got
that's right, because there's no
you break down,
there's nothing biological in there.
Yeah, you break down. It's just a element, right? Like right. sand in the glass, whatever that comes from, and then the aluminum, you just melt it back down, but. I thought that was really interesting because even with paper and cardboard, which are like your main recycled items in America, those will break down at some point. They end up in, you know, as toilet paper and tissue paper.
Well, yeah, the recycling push has always been in that. Well, I can't say it has always been, but the preponderance of what is used
yeah.
is in that area for containers.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff that's coming out in glass containers and in aluminum containers. They have wine. In aluminum now, they have water in aluminum cans now. I don't know.
Okay, water in aluminum cans. Yeah. Okay, fine.
But wine, I haven't tried it yet. A 40-ounce can of wine. I like. A
no, your 40-ounce cans of alcoholic beverages are not wine.
Yeah, I like a little bit nicer glass of wine. But I think it's a novel attempt at making the containers that come in recyclable. As opposed to the boxes that they come in, because there's still not a lot of places, even though there's CRV on them now, there's not a lot of places that reprocess those into something else.
So it's not the wide end of the funnel, it's the short end of the funnel.
Yeah.
Where does this stuff go now that we have X number of tons?
Now that we have CRV on it, yeah.
Great. KINS, News and Information Times, 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop. No, it's not. It's 23. We just had a full segment during the commercial break. Oh, watch out for the downpours also. I ran into three of them coming in.
Yeah, it was.
You got a couple also?
Yeah, it was coming down pretty good, especially in Pine Hill. It was coming down pretty good.
Oh, okay. Oh, you come in on the bike paths?
No.
So you don't go by the golf course?
Oh, I drive by the golf course.
Yeah, those are bike paths now.
Yeah.
You didn't know that?
It's a little thin, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's slow. It's slow.
If you're coming one way, I'm coming the other way, one of us is not going to have a pleasant experience.
It has slowed some people down because... And I could tell you that some people have been jamming through there. And I think that people coming off of Humboldt Hill... Is it
Humboldt? Yeah, either Humboldt Hill or South.
No, not
Or Humboldt Lumbar.
Hill. Lumbar Hill. Yeah, Lumbar Hill. Yeah. I'd probably appreciate being able to actually turn now. Because I've had a couple close calls up there.
That's just an engineering thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I
traffic engineer. I couldn't make it in engineering.
Well, okay. So you guys have one of your dump trucks going through there.
Yeah. We make it through.
Do they fit?
Yeah.
In one lane.
Yeah.
Yeah. With somebody else coming in the other direction.
Yeah. It's just you got to go slow. Yeah. We fit through some crazy tight stuff.
Well, that's true. You, the drivers probably know down to a, if they close their eyes, they could probably get within an inch.
You know what? I feel like, honestly, I feel like our garbage truck drivers know the space restrictions of their truck better than I do of my own body. You know, I can run into a doorway more often than a garbage truck driver will bump into a building or a fence.
Door open or door closed?
I'm too embarrassed to say. So, depends if it's a glass door or not.
I see.
I did walk through the screen door the other night, but I was barbecuing and I opened the slider and I forgot I closed the screen door and I turned around and walked right through the screen.
Oh, yeah. So you don't need a dog to do that?
No, I walked right through it.
Do it all by yourself. Yeah.
My smoker started beeping. I've got one of those Traeger smokers. So I turned right around, went back out, and took the screen out.
And the neighbors were well aware of it?
Oh, well, you know what? In my
after you informed them?
Well, after in my neighborhood, it's like on a hill, so your neighbors can see into your backyard. You know, it's just lucky at the moment that Brandon wasn't outside to laugh at me.
Oh, jeez. What about some of those large items? Most times when either you're in or Linda, we're talking about the outside, the landscape stuff, or we're talking about food containers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other things that I would think, whether they're sliding glass door screens.
Yeah.
Or not, I don't know. But there, I would think that there's a lot of other items that we don't consider. Is fair, or am I way off base on that?
Yeah, I think that there's a propensity for people to get a new couch and maybe they're getting an upcycled couch at the thrift store or something and then they're like, oh,
upcycled, what is that?
Well, somebody who's recycling their old couch, and your old stuff is nicer than the new stuff I can afford, so I go and pick up your old couch at the thrift store. But so I've got somebody who might bring the couch to my house for $20, but then I got to give them another $50 to do a dump run. But we've got in Eureka, in the city of Eureka, and in a lot of our franchises, we've got the ability for people to do a bulky item pickup.
And but are those necessarily recyclable, Frank?
No. At this point, no. It's still going to the landfill. I think that there's an opportunity for somebody to come up with, things like there's some recycling of mattresses. There's some recycling.
Yeah, I know Jill, like when she was at the waste management, got all excited because you could tear apart box spring. Box spring? Mm-hmm. I think box spring.
Yeah.
Somebody was doing it so you get the wood and you could get the metal springs and it.
Yeah,
it wasn't as didn't take up as much space in the landfills.
I had talked to and I didn't purchase at the time, but we were in the market to purchase a new mattress, and there was a company that was taking old mattresses, and what they were doing, they would strip the bedding, they would bake the springs, they would like bake them in an oven, and then they put new bedding on it. And somehow it was...
Oh, so they didn't have to... What do they call it in the cooking stuff? What? Oh, crud. It's not... deconstruct.
Yeah. So they actually... Yeah.
They just kind of kept it in place, sterilized it, rewrapped it, and it
No, they actually stripped the soft materials, the fibers off of the mattress springs. They cooked the springs somehow.
And, oh, the springs, not the frame.
Yeah, and then they reused the springs. And so I don't know how that was more cost effective, but they were making a good business out of it. They were selling mattresses for cheaper than brand new, which was a good deal. But that, it depends on what the profit margin in mattress sales would be.
Right, yeah, the resources.
Yeah. Sometimes there's things in like our e-waste. There's precious metals. There's copper. There's sometimes gold in your e-waste.
Isn't that why it's considered hazardous? They have a separate drop point?
Sometimes, we don't necessarily. Oh man, especially you look around like this radio station. Some of the technology.
We got a lot of solder around here. Yeah.
Some of the stuff that you guys have, and especially when you're upgrading. It's like, what do you do with it? I mean, you have humongous pieces of electronics that,
right.
I mean, that are sometimes 40, 50 years old. You can't afford to upgrade, but once every 30, 40 years, they're expensive, right? And so...
And heavy.
And incredibly heavy.
Don't forget the weight factor.
Yeah. And so they a lot of that and stuff from offices and sometimes the city, Caltrans, that stuff makes its way to our place in Fortuna. And we have a certified recycler down in the Bay Area that actually takes it, deconstructs it, takes the precious metals out of it, and then makes sure that everything finds its own safe home. So That's the best way to do it. You know, your VCRs, your laptops, you know, making sure, and it's cheap to do it the right way. Take it to the place, take it out to Fortuna, you know, and drop it off with one of the guys, Dave or Roth out there, and they'll make sure it gets packaged and sent to the right place and taken apart the right way. Because we've all seen on the internet and on the computer, on TV, when it's done the wrong way, what it ends up in a third world country, you know.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It really is 8:35. Back talking shop this morning with Frank Nelson from Recology Humboldt. So, Frank, we just heard Winston do the weather. How impactful is weather to your guys' operation? I mean, the guys that are out in the trucks, yeah, okay, if it's flooding, we get it.
Yeah. You know,
I don't think garbage trucks float real well.
No.
But overall, is there a significant difference between wet season or snow, depending on where you are in the country, and dry weather?
You know what there is? There's a I thought about this morning when I got up, you know, on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we have somebody that's in full, you know, if it's pouring down rain, it doesn't matter. At 5 a.m., there's somebody in full rain gear that has to manually pull out all of the cans, you know, downtown out of the enclosures and dump them manually. And so that's a tough route. It's called the city can route. And that, you know, that's a really tough route because not only are you, it's 100% physically dumping, old school dumping the cans. So, you know, that makes it pretty difficult and it makes it pretty, honestly, it's a tough route to have. So, you know, props to our driver that does that. But then you get...
That's where you put the young kid that's in shape?
You know what?
And doesn't know what he just signed up for?
No. We try to have somebody that's been around for a little bit because we have issues with the cans and we want them to look good. And so we want to do a good job. But I'll tell you where we ran into a lot of trouble was last year was Shelter Cove. Getting down that road, it snowed last year pretty good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so we had a heck of a time getting down into Shelter Cove, but luckily all the people in Shelter Cove are so understanding of the weather.
Because they're also
trying to, and they don't want our trash truck driver to get stuck or anything to happen to him because they all know our trash and recycle driver out there and they care about him.
So Shelter Cove has got curbside?
They've got curbside, yeah.
How'd that happen? Or is that their special district voting for it?
It just happened organically over time. Yeah, and we've got a pretty awesome driver, Alfredo and Shiloh, that do it. They leave out of Eureka. They go down to Shelter Cove.
Oh, really? So they're not even like residents?
Oh, sorry. They leave out of Fortuna, rather, and drive down to Shelter Cove. Yeah, and they pick up all the trash. But last year it was a day-by-day struggle waiting for the snow to get, you know, melt a little more, and okay, when can we shoot the road and see if we can do it? And the guys were literally sitting in the truck on the road, you know,
waiting for the plow to come by,
waiting for the plow, waiting for the melt, you know. And as soon as we could, we got through there. But just a tremendous amount of support from everyone in Shelter Cove and everyone in the community too. You know, we've got customers here that that live on some roads that kind of happened over time, you know, where someone had owned some property, built another house off in the woods, and then another, and then all of a sudden you have a little tiny trail, and now we're driving these trucks. They're like, you know, they're like 60,000 pounds loaded, you know, on this little trail that's made out of, you know, whatever gravel and pieces of rock and whatever else. And so what happens a lot of the time is we have some really wonderful customers that'll call and they'll say, hey, the road's not looking too good. Why don't you skip me for this week, you know, and I'll put out an extra bag next week. And
so it's a partnering.
Yeah. Yeah. They know because if you live on that road, you don't want the road getting smushed up from the truck. And at the same time, that you
know,
the
truck stuck.
Or the truck stuck. Yeah, you're going to be stuck waiting for days. And that's, I think that's the third thing that really, that the third out of four things that really impact us by the weather is getting stuck in the mud. The trucks just don't have, you know, you would they're heavier than like a FedEx truck, you know, or a UPS truck by tons and tons.
A lot, yeah.
And so it doesn't take a whole lot for, even with a locking differential, for that truck to get stuck in the mud. And then the last one is with the recycling. You know, we've got, you know, 22 people in Samoa that are hand sorting that recycling. And so, you know, all summer long, a lot of us don't think about it, but especially right now after Christmas. After Christmas, our volume is insane. Everybody's loading up their recycle can with all of the boxes from the packaging and all the recycling or all the wrapping paper. And so what happens is a lot of the time people put their recycling can out with the lid open. And in our climate,
you isn't put that out, like the invitation for the birds to come?
Well, especially for recycling today, you know, I drove by a bunch of recycling cans and it's pouring down rain.
Or wet, yeah.
Yeah, and so wet cardboard is terrible for someone who has to sort through it, you know. So I always encourage people to take the time, make sure you break the boxes down and make sure the lid gets closed, because I mean, other places, you know, in you know, maybe in
Arizona or somewhere.
You don't have to worry about it here, but in Humboldt, we can have a beautiful 70-degree day, and by the morning, it's pouring down rain. So you got to keep your recycling lid closed. It really helps out.
Well, yeah, breaking down the boxes, I think.
Yeah, that's a big help.
There's like a physical release for me.
I do too.
It's like, okay.
I do too. I'll be out there. I've had my neighbors ask me, pop out the window and say, oh, I thought it was a bear out there. Oh, it's me stomping boxes.
Yeah, do your little growl.
Yeah, yeah. And then what happens, I think, a lot of the times is that if people don't break down actually break down your boxes, then other stuff gets inside the box and then it gets squished in the truck. And then you've got something that you just have to throw away because you can't deconstruct that box full of stuff.
Yeah, the smushed, or you stomp on it instead of snapping it.
Yeah,
and busting it apart.
It's cathartic almost, cutting up, breaking down. I don't know why, but it's one of those things that gets
I can remember when my brother had the homework store. He'd have, you know, things come in cardboard, right? He wouldn't take the X-Acto knife and punch it through the center. And they break apart at that point, you know, unless you got a really small box or really thick cardboard.
What's the fastest?
And it's like, that, okay, and then you just kind of tear it and smash it and fold it, and it's done.
Fastest way, like I said, 100 billion approximately cardboard boxes. I mean, that's insane. And not to think of all the other ones that come from, you know, overseas. And it's pretty much the most recycled item in America. Yeah.
I wonder how much, what that translates to, or how many boxes are made?
Like in the whole world?
Well, or I mean, if it's America, let's use America as a common reference. So if it's 100 billion recycled, how many are manufactured?
No, and it's 100 billion manufactured.
Okay, well then, continuing with that thought, so I don't look totally stupid, of the 100 billion that are made, how many are recycled?
Well, there was I think it was back in like 2018, where we had reached a point to where about 97% of all cardboard in America was recycled.
97% of the recyclable cardboard
was being recycled, and that was kind of like the highest that we've done so far.
I couldn't imagine you'd be able to get higher than that.
No, and I think that was something that I think that's something we should hold ourselves to. You know, I think once you hit that best, you should try to best yourself again. Or at least that's the way I try to.
Or stay there. Yeah. Well, Frank, are there any numbers that indicate what percent is commercial and what percent is residential?
Yeah.
I'm thinking like some of, let's say you're a home builder. Okay, you get those big old refrigerator boxes.
Yeah.
So you don't break those things down. You got like four layers thick because you don't want to have your fridge dinged up, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do those get recycled at the same rate as, let's say, your 12-pack of
San Pellegrino?
Of water, yeah. You know, you just kind of bust it apart and it's no big deal.
I would say the stores, you know, your like Polinsky's and the other local stores that buy appliances and couches and stuff, it's very economically viable for them to break the boxes down and to put it in a cardboard bin. So we have a lot of participation in our county from all of our stores, you know, our bakeries, like Ramon's, like all of the local people do a great job at breaking down boxes and putting them in a recycle bin, in a cardboard bin specifically, in their cardboard bin, because it's a lot cheaper than it is to throw it in the garbage. I read a statistic that it was like around roughly in America, it's roughly the whole country around $30 a ton to recycle material versus $50 a ton to landfill it versus $70 a ton to incinerate it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Think of the natural gas or the oil, the propellants that you need to incinerate something to an American standard now. I mean, it's
okay for American standards.
Yeah, I would say not your burn barrel in the backyard from the 60s, but yeah. So you're looking at your cheapest way to handle waste in America is to recycle it.
And yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to refuse to say dollars too. Just won't do it. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It really is 8:48. I looked this time.
And 18 seconds.
Yeah, 19. Yeah. Frank Nelson from Recology Humboldt is alongside this morning. So weather does impact what you do at the collection end. What about at the working end? Oh, the processing end might be a better term to use. Does that moisture just kind of run off and no big deal, or do you have to treat it and make sure that it's clean and this and that and sterilized before it gets into the system?
You know, for the most part, we're pretty lucky that we're able to contain any moisture that comes in the recycling. It just causes a degrading of the recycling material on the backside.
You got your blue container, though.
Yeah.
Okay, it's all, blue's recycling for everywhere except for McKinleyville.
Yeah.
The colors are backwards there. Okay, so the it's open. You've got recyclable materials, but maybe there's a couple things in there that shouldn't be in there.
Hopefully not.
I'm thinking like food stuff. The pizza box.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you got that stuff in that liquid. You turn it over and dump it into the rig. Okay, now there's a little bit of moisture, and you do that 50 or 100,000 times, and you got this amount of water.
Yeah.
Does that just kind of spill out, or do you have to collect it and treat it? And
well, believe it or not, there's not, with all of the paper and the cardboard, since it's so heavy on cardboard.
Oh, you just get sucked up?
Yeah, you end up with this nasty cardboard or this wet paper gunk that ends up having to get, it can still, believe it or not, it can still get sold. It just sells for a lot less.
Oh, you can't squeeze it out then?
No. No, you can't like go through a dryer.
No, I'm laughing because I'm thinking of those sponges that you get for the kids. You know, they're really compressed. Oh. Drop it in, it goes woof.
Yeah, grow your own dinosaur.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, we have in the recycle pile on a really wet day. You know, you'll see a lot of wet cardboard, and we're able to process it.
Can it drain? I mean, just let it sit there and let the water drain off it for a little bit? Or
is
there just too much of it?
Once you bale it, it'll you bale it in a 2,000-pound bale, you know, and it'll sit in the warehouse and it'll dry, I mean, to a certain extent. But then you're going to sell it, and there's going to be a little bit of what they call a water deduction when you sell it. And so because it all goes by weight. And so if you're selling wet cardboard, it's a lot heavier than dry cardboard, so they're going to give you less for the cardboard. But the interesting thing about it is the other parts of dealing with moisture in the waste system, and that's landfills and compost facilities. Because your compost facilities, right, the compost and landfill facilities are highly controlled on water, but they're open to the environment. So how do
you... So you ask, Is it aspiration or respiration?
They have settling ponds so that things just kind of dry up. But imagine a landfill that's, you know, a 100-acre landfill or a 100-acre composting facility where there's windrows of... And so you're trying to contain all of the water that hits that 100 acres within that 100 acres, you know, and have settling ponds so that way that material doesn't run off into the surrounding areas.
Right. I would think some of it, you know, depending on what the materials are, could be like beneficial.
Yeah.
Rather than being a negative.
Yeah, it would actually add to breaking the material down.
Yeah.
Like in certain portions of the composting process, like when you're first building your first windrows, you want to have the material as wet as you can as soon as you go through a grinder and put the, you know, you put the organic material like your green waste, your food waste, you put it through a grinder initially, and then you build what's called a windrow, which is a long row of compost. And at that point, you want it to be as wet as possible. And so that way...
Because it facilitates the breakdown?
Exactly. So all of the different things in it, you know, the chemicals and bugs in the compost are doing their thing. They're doing their natural thing and breaking the compost down. But as it gets moved, you know, closer to the finished goods side, you want it to be drier, right? Because you don't want to sell a bucket of compost wet. You want to sell a bag of compost dry. And so trying to control how wet that material is at the end of a process while it's open in the environment can be really difficult.
That was a question that I had was I don't know if it's a garbage company that runs the landfills or if it's a local jurisdiction that does, why aren't they in the business of selling compost at the end of, now maybe if it's a 50-year process, okay, great, we got a little bit of time still. But if with some of the organics, it's a much quicker process,
yeah.
Why not bag and sell it? Where are they?
They are, yeah. They're, and even in bulk, they're selling it to vineyards and pretty much everyone in the Central Valley.
The commercial guys.
Yeah.
The big boys, yeah. Cool. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, I've had a great time talking to you,
Brian. Yeah, now you're gonna go back out on the spit and enjoy your view.
Well, I'm gonna go out and check on the guys and see how it's going today.
Oh. That explains the mucklucks. Okay, yep. Cool. See everybody tomorrow.